Hello, everyone. We're going to go ahead and get the session started. Welcome. So I'll tell you a little bit about the background of the content that you're going to hear today. In 2012, Internet 2 and EDUCAUSE sponsored an initiative to pilot the use of e-textbooks across multiple universities. And over 25 institutions participated in the study, with each one evaluating the impact of e-textbooks. So it's a nice case to take a look at the data if you're looking at implementing something like that. And today we're going to hear from six representatives from those institutions and some of the lessons and insights that they gained from their participation in the pilot. So I'm just going to introduce the speakers. We've got Maggie Jesse, Senior Director, ITS Instructional Services from the University of Iowa. Stacy Maroney, Dean, Information Technology, Associate VP, Learning Technologies from Indiana. Robert Rubini, Director, Office of E-Learning at the University of Minnesota. Jennifer Sparrow, Director of Emerging Technologies and New Ventures at Virginia Tech. Jim Twetten, Director, Academic Technologies from Iowa State University, and Clara Vandenblink, Director of Academic Technologies at Cornell. So thanks to all of you and welcome. And Claire, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Veronica. Good morning, everyone. What we're going to talk about is the two semesters that we've all been participating at different levels with the e-textbook pilot. As Veronica said, we have worked with Internet 2 and the NetPlus division with the new cloud services, as well as other providers, to pull the e-textbook pilot together. So the goal is looking at new models for both the business side as well as the teaching learning side of e-textbooks and digital course materials. The way that the pilot has worked is we engage with NetPlus and EDUCAUSE and form a relationship with the vendors. And so with the fee that we pay, we get access to the e-textbook reader and the software platform, as well as a series of textbooks provided initially by McGraw-Hill for our faculty. So the way that we've instituted on our campuses, our local LMS is how it's connected and how it's delivering the e-textbooks to campus. And as you'll see, at each of our six different institutions, we represent four LMSs as well. So it's worked well with all of them. The course load platform offers annotation tools, commenting, collaboration, and so forth, in addition to being able to render the e-textbook software and content. So what I'm going to first talk about is the common findings. And this is what we have done as a consortium of schools. So in the spring of 2012, fall of 2012, all of the schools engaged in joint research. So what we're talking about are the findings that cut across all of the schools. And then the second portion of our presentation of each of my colleagues will be talking about how that is unique and how it differs at each of the institutions and how they conducted their e-textbook pilot. So the first thing we're looking at is, what did students like or not like about the e-textbook platform? So for today's purposes, we're really focusing mostly on the teaching and learning attributes of the pilot. There's a whole other business side and management that we're going to talk about a little bit less. So students really focused on what they liked, what they didn't like, how it impacted their teaching and learning. So there was a number of questions that we asked about whether or not it helped them to study, communicate with their faculty, understand course concepts a little bit better. And the overlying trend that you'll see is, the data is mixed, and that kind of is going to be a big trend for us this morning, is looking at some of it's mixed, some of it's contradictory, and that's really where we're sorting all of this out as we go through. But one of the key findings is that students had access to these free e-textbooks. They were asked if they would purchase a print copy. It was a very low amount of students. So in the fall data, the number was 21% said that they would purchase a print. They also said preferences, they prefer to study primarily with a print textbook. Now, this will be a little bit different in the next couple of things we're going to talk about, but that's one of the things that we're looking at. And keep in mind, for some students, this is maybe their first foray into using a textbook for studying digitally, and whether or not this goes in with the technology adoption criteria. One of the key things that really jumped out, where the students were pretty much in agreement, is in the usability issues around the platform. What they really liked was the portability. So I know the Cornell students, which we have a very large campus, as do our other colleagues, they liked the ability that they could have their textbook with them studying as you're walking around campus, or sports as you're traveling, what have you. So portability jumped out as, yes, students really like that, but it was confounded with, they had concerns about readability and usability. Some of it had to do with device-specific concerns and the real infancy of the platform. The feedback from the students was very, very mixed. In fact, some of the comments that we saw were like, were they using the same tool? And you'll see these two comments really are, they're using the same platform, same textbook, and yet they have two very distinct experiences. So one of the future things maybe to look at, what is it that's driving this? One of the confounding factors that we've seen is not just the newness of these platforms, and they're continually evolving. The course load platform changed from the spring to the fall semester, for example, but also the quality of the e-textbooks that we're getting from the publishers. Think about it like a sort of an advanced PDF type document. So the quality can be variable, and you have the publication quality we get from the publishers and then how the software renders it. So it's really a two-step process, and that also has impacted the students' perception of how well this works. Here is an interesting thing with our statistics from really two semesters is some students said they read more, about 22%, but about half the students said they tended to read less with e-textbooks. So that's an interesting statistic, and again, we're looking at where that is in the technology spectrum. In the fall, we also did a teaching and learning study that went a little bit beyond the basic questions that we asked students. And out of that, it still had that same kind of mixed result, where some students were sort of stuck in not quite sure how to deal with the e-textbook and not seeing the value of learning. But one of the common statistics we saw from the student data in the fall is about one-third of the students reported that they were studying differently with the software. Now, the students in the teaching and learning study were schools that were probably more than one semester into the pilot. So this may be also associated with their experience with the e-textbook and learning how to adapt to that. So that was one of the interesting findings. As far as faculty goes, this was really one of the more deciding factors. Most of the faculty did not take advantage of the features. There was additional need for training, and a lot of them cited time factors as well. So sort of the standard things we hear from faculty. One of the biggest impacts that students reported was there was a direct correlation about how engaged faculty were with using the e-textbook, how actively they used it, and that it had a direct impact on students' perceptions of the value of the e-textbook. One of the questions we looked at is how integral the textbook was to the course. So even though this is in its infancy, faculty still were actually fairly positive in looking at the potential. So they were spotting the potential, even though it's not quite necessarily there yet. So quotes such as, potential, I think it can support learning, it has a direct benefit, and they all said this move is inevitable. So I find that's a really interesting view of technology adoption. So we have not a lot of time, and I want to make sure we'll have a chance for questions at the end. So we do have a lot of the results of the student survey. So if you're interested in digging into the data in more detail, the Spring 2012 report is published on the NetPlus Cloud website, and we will be this spring publishing the detailed results of the Fall 2012 pilot. And we also have a lot of interesting data at each school. But one of the things that, as we look at all this data that's being a confounding set of data and contradictory set of data and really unclear, is one of the things looking at is a quote from an earlier study that Indiana University did is that this may be related to the technology adoption cycle and how people need to get comfortable, learn the technology, and so forth. So that may be one of the other things. So that's sort of a quick summary of the common findings across all of the 30 plus schools that participated in the various pilots. And now we're going to change gears a little bit and jump to the local perspective and what each campus saw at their particular school. So I'll turn it over to Jim Twetten from Iowa State.
Thank you. Morning. Everybody in the other zip code over there can hear me okay? Yeah. Okay, good. I just want to talk very briefly about the reasons why we got into the e-text pilot at Iowa State. Over a number of years of doing a number of different pilots on a number of different technologies, I've become really pretty convinced that it's difficult to have a good, solid discussion with your own campus constituents and with your own business process owners and your own faculties if you're not actually doing that pilot right there on your own campus. That sounds like kind of a no-brainer thing to say. But we could have sat back and simply read the reports that came out of previous pilots on the ETECs and tried to assimilate that, but I can promise you that I wouldn't have been having dialogue with the provost and dialogue with the director of purchasing in the bookstore about those issues, which has been very beneficial for us. We had some great faculty engagement in the process. I've sort of lumped pilots into two different categories here for the purpose of this quick summary. One is when some new technology comes along and it's all nice and new and bright and shiny, and we haven't been able to do that kind of thing before. And so we run that through its paces, and we see if we get some interested faculty to work with that. And that's all well and good. Here in this case, we've got a new technology around a really old thing, really. I mean, textbooks have been around for how many centuries? So we've got the content that's been there. We just have a new way to engage it. And so what you've got is a little bit different way that perhaps it needs to be approached, because you can throw that kind of technology and try and show the advantages of that to the faculty and to the students, but you also have to realize that they're used to using it in a different way, and it may be the case that you need to do some pretty invasive support to help them understand how to break out of those old modes or out of those old paradigms. So in doing that, we had some pretty invasive faculty support, and that actually worked really well of the 14 pilot faculty we had in 18 different courses. There are not all. I'm not going to say we had 100% engagement, but I think we easily had all but three of the faculty members were at the focus sessions that we had. They were all involved in the faculty support. They're all involved in the community of discussing how it was going electronically. So I was really pleased with that. Even had some good student engagement. One of the courses, actually three different sections of a course, was on business communications. And the instructor turned the ETECs pilot into an assignment about how it worked, and so the students in the class had to interview the business process owner. And so it was interesting to go into that class, be asked questions, actually learn a little bit about how they were perceiving the ETECs, or perhaps misperceiving the ETECs, and be able to work on that and answer some of their questions. And some of the best student feedback from our pilot didn't really come necessarily from the survey that we did at the end, but having that direct engagement with the students, and that was invaluable. Biggest issues we had were around business processes, and I know this is a teaching and learning conference, but I have to tell you that we spent a lot of time working on making sure that business processes were not overtly interrupted, and we did an okay job with that, although perhaps not stellar. Certainly the bookstore at our institution is not contracted out. It's not a Barnes & Noble. It's a wholly owned business enterprise within the university, and it's entirely cost recovery. A lot of you have similar situations, I'm sure. And so when this pilot comes in and all of a sudden we're talking about giving e-text to students in 18 different courses and representing over 600 students, that's a lost revenue for that bookstore. And that's part of how they make their money and pay their staff. So that's a very real thing for them, and so we worked through that. It took a lot of discussion. It was a little bumpy at first, but that's a significant thing that you have to work through whenever you're implementing something like this. They're also the keepers of the Higher Education Opportunity Act information. And so here we're introducing a pilot where there's the potential for students to interact directly with the publisher and bypass the bookstore. Well, if you're not gathering that data for HEOA compliance, how do you get that? So those are some questions we really wrestled with. And I would just finish by saying that the learning impact that we all want to focus on and all want to try and measure and all want to try and improve on our campuses is difficult. That dialogue is difficult to have when there's other noise in the system and when there's other things happening around business processes. So it's important to try and take care of that that stuff up front. Thanks. Jennifer.
So at Virginia Tech, we had a very similar experience to what Jim spoke about, issues with the bookstore. I think they probably got a hit out of me, so I think you were much more successful in negotiating with your bookstore. So, but we also had similar experiences in terms of the engagement of faculty and the engagement of students in our courses, and we really wanted to look at the teaching and learning piece.
And what we found is that we have real students and they have real usage issues, concerns, comments. So we looked at this from the perspective of students came to us and said, we're using it in this way. We would like to have the opportunity to make it a PDF so we can take our notes in OneNote because that's what we're comfortable with. We're engineering students. That's how we do the rest of our notes. And so the feedback from students was that they were interested in this. They certainly were happy with the price, as mentioned in the similar findings. They liked the portability of it. But there were some real issues that they encountered. Folks were trying to read on an iPad. That wasn't necessarily the most seamless way for them to be able to do that. And I think in our discussions and thinking about the big picture issues is how do we address and educate our students' issues and concerns as they come up and prior to, if we can do that, the rolling out this pilot. The second piece is that for me was really the aha moment for this. This is a real disruption to how we've done things in the past. Jim mentioned this technology's been around for a significant amount of time, right? We've had books forever. Well, as long as I've been alive, I don't know for Jim. But reading's been a very solitary activity, typically. You read, maybe you take notes, maybe you highlight. But unless you come to class and consciously engage in that discussion about what you've read, right, this is a pretty solitary activity. We're starting to see a shift in that. We know on Amazon that you can make notes and share those notes and comments in the cloud with any number of users. And so for us, this was the piece that's different. We've taken reading from a very private, solitary activity to an activity that can be very social, and we can talk about this collective intelligence and this community knowledge we can create around something. And then, again, as we've mentioned earlier, faculty engagement is the key. So the more engaged the faculty were, the more engaged the students were, and the more satisfied they were with their e-textbook experience. We had some engineering faculty that went through and had a color coding scheme to their faculty notes. Red was for where the book was wrong and the professor was right. And yellow was for things that students need to study more. So the students appreciated that. For me, and this has actually just happened in the last couple of weeks, we're also participating in the pilot this spring, we have a faculty member who is using this in a biology course, and I know you can't read that very well, I just wanted to show you, the student had actually taken a note there, and she talked about how this DNA and the life cycle of cancer reminds her of Darwinism, and the faculty member had a really interesting point, so the student had taken the note within the text. And the faculty member replied to me, sent me an email and just said this. The student's comment has completely impacted what I'll be talking about today in class. So even the lecture part of the course will be co-authored by my students if they keep writing good stuff like this. And the end of her comment was, yay. So for us, it really is thinking about this transformational shift in how we do reading and what it means to be collaborative and interesting reading engagement. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Maggie.
Thanks, Jennifer. At Iowa, we had the real assumption that we weren't going to be much different than the schools that had gone through the pilot in the spring. We only have done the pilot once in the fall. We've kicked it off again for this spring. So we decided to try to kick off a deeper assessment and study of the actual learning impacts of this this new way of engaging with a textbook. And I've put on the screen up here the folks at Iowa who are collaborating from ITS and our College of Education with partial funding from CCUMC. And they're doing some really interesting work. And I've got some notes here to talk just a little bit about how they've put their study together because I want to make sure that I represent it correctly. But the names are there if you'd like to contact those folks. They're just now starting to analyze some of the analytics that come out of course load. That's another thing that's a real benefit to this for us is that we've got the analytics there to really study what's happening matched up with what the students are reporting themselves. So the team is in the midst of analyzing those analytics as well as all of the data that they've collected. And what they really want to know is whether the students are achieving better learning outcomes. And they're controlling this to students' prior learning. And they're matching them up to students in traditional courses using traditional textbooks to see whether that reading behavior changes and whether there are impacts to learning. So there were 287 e-text users and 276 students in using a traditional textbook. And participants completed a beginning and end of semester survey and also were asked to complete 14 electronic reading journals, one per week. And then the researchers received access to students' demographic data, as well as measures of their prior learning and outcomes in the course. And for the text users, as I mentioned, they'll actually have access to the analytics from the course. And as I said, what we really want to know is whether there's a significant predictor of final grade. And we can argue whether final grade is really what we're looking for outcomes, but for right now, that's what the researchers are focusing on. And is there an impact to reading behavior? From our standpoint, the assessment being tied to the pilot itself actually allowed us to create a better pilot. We were able to focus on specific disciplines and courses to match them up and do our recruiting of those students and faculty that I think in the long run developed a much stronger pilot. I talked about the 200-plus students on each side of the e-text and the non-e-text, but we had a total of 800 students in the pilot, which was the maximum that we could have for the level that we chose. Just like Iowa State, we found a lot of strength in the faculty, community, and engagement. Those two things were keys to success. The third one that would have been a better key to success is if we would have provided more intentional training of our students. I think we rely on the students' own social network to teach each other how to do these things, and we assume that they have technology savvy that they just don't have. And just like some of the comments you saw that contradicted each other, we had students who didn't know they could print, students who didn't know that they could search for something in the textbook, which seems pretty basic to most of us. So during this pilot, we have used that information to improve what we're doing and mandated more intentional training of the students, which is pretty minimal, 15 minutes in a classroom to go through some of the features of the application. So you see some of our preliminary findings there. I don't think that they're very surprising, given what you've already heard from other colleagues. We do see some positive random effect for one instructor who promoted the tool use in e-texts, and so we'll be digging in that a little bit deeper and take it beyond students just saying, I engaged with the text more because of this faculty member, and actually see if that instructor had a big impact. And again, I think we all assume that that's probably the case, but we hope the data will play out in the same way. And I'm going to turn it over to my colleague from Indiana, who I think is going to talk more about the deep impact of these new platforms.
Thanks, Maggie. So, let's see. Have we advanced now? So, we've been at the eText initiative at Indiana University for a while now, and we actually have fully deployed as of January of 2012, so we're a little bit different than my colleagues. And so what I've become very interested in over the course of this year is to think about so our findings, I should say, are very similar to what the other institutions have found that is in the report that we submitted. But I really think that we need to be thinking about the textbook itself and what that really means. And we've alluded to that. To what extent is the textbook, is it just a textbook? Because if we really have a situation where, the textbook is not integral and it's not a part fundamentally of what this course, you don't even have to read it to do well. And so I've got a quote that I think is pretty interesting from a student. I was reviewing some data this morning, and the student said, I never read the textbook in this class, and I got an A. Now, this was an e-text, by the way. But I also never miss class. Okay, so one of the things that I'm thinking about a lot is as long as a textbook, whether it's paper or electronic, is dealt with as, I really hope the students read it as background, but I'm not going to engage with the text. I really won't even refer to it very much, except that I'll put it in the syllabus and I'll say, read chapter 2. But if I never talk about chapter 2, I never refer to chapter 2, students are smart. And this student, this quote, this student figured out that I don't have to read the text to do well in the course. So I think we need to be thinking about, how do we think about teaching and learning with an electronic book that for the first time enables us to think differently about what we're doing. So some interesting, just a finding that I think is worth noting around the faculty. The faculty member, this is a quote that comes out of the spring report. The faculty member said, as exciting as it was, I still think I was barely using the e-text to its potential. And we heard this a lot, that the faculty members were getting into this, and they kind of did a little bit, but they knew that they weren't doing everything they could do to really make this an effective tool. I should tell you that this faculty member is, in fact, I just noticed on the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning, he's a Bloomington faculty member. Our Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning is doing an eTech session, and guess who's the featured presenter who's a faculty member? This faculty member. So this is a really good thing, that this faculty member didn't just say, well, I could be doing more. He actively sought out our staff in the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning, and they invited him to have conversations with other faculty at IU around his experience. So I think that some of that kind of potential to really get faculty to talk to one another, and you know, Jim's experience at Iowa State is very encouraging, that there was this high level of engagement in really, you know, faculty getting excited around this. So this notion of, you know, we need to move from the read chapter 2 before class to a true pedagogical change that has textbook content as an integral part of the teaching and learning process. So those words sound good, but this isn't easy. This requires our faculty to think about, okay, I could never engage with this book the way that I can now. So what does that mean for my teaching? Well, my beautiful PowerPoints have to be rethought potentially. And different activities are now possible in a classroom setting that weren't before. And so this pedagogical change is, I believe, at the heart of this. And I think it's exciting, but it's also for those of us who work with faculty, know that it can be daunting for our faculty to have to step back and have a course that's working really well and say, why don't you rethink these kinds of things and to really bring the textbook content alive in a way that potentially you haven't before? So those are the kinds of things that are on our mind, and I think in my colleagues' mind as we think about where we head with eTechs. I will now turn it over to my very good colleague from Minnesota, Bob.
Thank you very much, Stacy. Just as a quick survey, how many of you have active programs to encourage the use of e-text at your institutions? You want to raise your hand? Okay, and how many of you are probably going to start one soon? All right. Well, we were in pretty much exactly that place about a year ago, and I want to actually give thanks again to Stacy and the group at Indiana University, Internet 2, and EDUCAUSE, for having the foresight and encouragement to bring other institutions into more of a collaborative approach to this work. Because I think the sense was that by being able to work together as institutions, that we would be able to realize a lot more benefit and learn a lot more. And I think you're seeing the results of this on the panel today. Each of us was able to get different experiences and also figure out what the similarities are. And if we had just done this independently and not collaborated, we would not have been able to produce the reports, generate the research, and advance this whole area of looking at how important e-texts are for education. So I want to just emphasize the importance of that collaboration with your colleagues, and that's what this conference is about. We also found that on campus, as Jim had indicated in his presentation, how important it is that you work with a wide variety of people. We brought the bookstore in early. We brought the legal counsel in. We brought faculty governance folks together. We had the IT people. And literally, unheard of, probably within about 30 days, we got everybody on board from the time the pilot was first given to us as an opportunity by Indiana University to the point that we had the faculty signed and engaged. And it was just because we had a number of pre-existing relationships and we were able to work together. The benefit is greater impact. You have much better ability to leverage the expertise of all those folks on campus and in regional collaborations, and you generate more support and you avoid a lot of the pitfalls. The other notion of collaboration was within the type of platform that we were looking at. There were two types of collaboration in the e-learning platform. One of them was student to student. The other was faculty to student. How many of you have e-readers like Nooks or Kindles out there? Any of you? Okay, or you might have some iPads where you're using, book or something like that. That's a very different experience. That's a solitary experience where you're looking at that content yourself. On the other hand, with this platform that we were using, we had a lot of capacity for collaborative. So students could share notes with each other. They could share questions with faculty members. Faculty could, some of our panelists were saying, have the capability of annotating the information, updating it, saying what they agreed on, what they didn't agree on. They also had the ability to track how students were doing with this whole platform. And that's very different from what you would be doing if you had just a Nook, a Kindle, or an iPad and looking at a book individually. What we found in the results, and perhaps it was because of what some of my colleagues said, that we really didn't have a lot of time to talk to the students and the faculty about how some of these advanced capabilities could really be used to move this beyond a textbook to a collaborative learning experience. We did find, however, that when faculty members did take the time to really use the features, that students did note that there was a benefit from being able to have that collaboration with the faculty. You'll notice some of the features that the faculty to the students had in their collaboration. One, though, that was very distinct was the notion of the faculty being able to see which students were falling behind. And we were actually surprised that when we interviewed the faculty afterwards, that was one area they were not so interested in necessarily participating in directly. You'll notice the quote where it says, "I'm here to help students, not to see if they're doing work." So a lot of you who are doing learning analytics, you might say, wow, what a great feature. But for at least the faculty we talked to, they were saying, well, that's a student's responsibility. We don't want to do a big brother thing and watching, you know, who's engaged with the text and who's never cracked open their electronic textbook. In general, I would say, as we looked at the teaching and learning and how they might use e-text in the future, we got a fairly low number. I think that's what we found nationally. We had about 14.4% said they would purchase an e-text over a traditional book, and perhaps it was because we didn't go into as much depth in terms of what those collaboration features might really be, and our faculty members didn't have the time to leverage that fully. But it was the case that the main variable for us as well that the students were looking at was cost. You know, they weren't necessarily looking at these advanced pedagogical features and the collaborative components that we think could certainly be there in the future. And as you'll see in front of you, for the most part, our students were saying that they really did not read that much more. A few of them said they highlighted and annotated more, nor did they necessarily learn that much more. But I think what will be interesting to see as the research goes forward with this and other platforms is how that changes if we get more engaged faculty and we spend the time with the students and the faculty to really make sure that they get engaged in the features. Last thing I'd say is we have a pilot with our pharmacy college at the University of Minnesota, and early results that we're getting back from them from our fall project are actually very, very positive, a little bit different than these. And we're hoping to be able to share that online in the near future.
Thank you, Bob. So I just want to end up by saying is, as you can see across all of the 30 or so schools that have participated in the pilot, a diverse experience and a diverse set of questions and issues that are being raised. At Cornell, we're doing our third semester of the pilot, and we'll be making a deliberate decision at the end of the spring 2013 to move from pilot mode to operational mode, because as one of our faculty quote says, it's inevitable. And in spite of the EPUB platforms and the readers and devices and everything changing, we need to embrace it as this is part of the teaching and learning suite that we need to offer. And I'll end you with the comment is really looking at, there is, as many people said, there is the pedagogical potential with this. There is all of the technological convention, the analytics, everything like that, but there's all this churn between software and devices and whether or not the publishers and faculty have taken advantage of this new medium yet. So we really liken it to the web 20 years ago. For those of us that can remember that, is there was all of that churn, and it was sort of originally, let's just share information. Now it has all of this, you know, collaboration and all these other potential, and I really see that as a future of this medium, but it's going to take us a little while to get there. So thank you for coming this morning, and we now have time to take some questions from the group. So there's two microphones up at the front, so please come to the microphone so we can share your questions.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Claire, you mentioned that the findings were listed on the Net Plus website. Can you give us direction to that?
Sure. It's on, if you go to the Internet 2 website and click on their Net Plus, it'll be part of our slides that we'll post. It's under their cloud initiative, and then there is a report. We're also working with ECAR branch of EDUCAUSE this spring, so we will be posting the complete fall 2012 results soon. Yes.
Given that the familiarity with the technology of highlighting, noting, printing, whatever, was one of the things that tripped up some of the students, what has been y'all's experience as far as similarities from different textbook providers? Because one textbook provider highlighting may occur this way, another one may do it a different way. Was that an issue? Did you say with just one provider in your pilots, and how might you address that?
During the spring of 2012, McGraw-Hill was the partner for it. And I know that I think for the fall you have another partner too for the content. One of the things that we've talked about on the panel is that oftentimes the easiest thing for a publisher to do is to just take a PDF of the text that is in the book with even double columns. That makes it very difficult, both from accessibility standpoint as well as readability, for students to get the full benefit instead of using like an EPUB format that flows on a tablet or even gets enhanced with multimedia. So we have sort of a bit of a trade-off here between what's quick and easy and cheap for the publishers, which is just that PDF, versus additional formats which might add more value but take a little more time and cost a little more money. Other panelists?
I can speak to that. One of the things we did at Cornell in our fall pilot, we expanded it to local content. So we took, in partnership with the bookstore, what had been paper course packs. We created digital course packs, and we also had many examples of about a half a dozen courses with faculty-generated material so that we can play with the EPUB and the other formats to see what the potential was. We didn't go the multimedia route yet, but we published it. We're doing a publishing matrix for our audience as well to let them know. So we wanted to sort of see where is that, you know, the sweet spot between this multi-step process of how viable the format is. Next question.
I'd like to follow up on the usability question. It seems like a fairly fundamental problem with a textbook that is difficult to read, and that is one of the things that was true in all of the focus groups. So to follow up on the question of it being easy for publishers to do PDFs, it also gives them control of the content in a lot of ways. So what's the mechanism for encouraging them to do things that are easier for students to work with? Because I think that's fundamental for all of the other things that you'd like to do with textbooks. Any thoughts?
I think I can answer that. I think this is where the strong consortium between NetPlus and EDUCAUSE really comes into play, because not only do we have the benefit of a large number of schools doing combined research together and sharing the findings, but it's exactly that, is really going back to the publishers and saying, we need this. One note about that is the results have varied from semester to semester because the course load platform has evolved quickly. So I know there was in December 2012, they did a patch that really improve the usability and accessibility tremendously. So it's hard because it's like hitting a moving target. But I think that's where this consortium approach really has its strength, because now we have data. We can go back and say, this is what we as a combined approach. Sure. Go ahead, Jeffrey.
The one piece that I wanted to add in addition to the consortium is really, I think we're at the cusp of an opportunity to make some transformational suggestions to the publishers. So we want to be able to have student-generated content. We want the multimedia piece. In response to our student focus groups last fall, Course Load actually talked with our students on some usability issues of, you know, I can't highlight it when I'm on my iPad. I need the drop down to look like this. So I think the e-reader providers are very open, flexible, agile. I think that the publishers, they're just not as flexible and agile. And they need a lot of us saying, we want it to be this way. We won't stand for it any longer. If you think about Napster to iTunes, I really think we're at the cusp of this for e-textbooks.
You know, the other thing that I think a lot of us would love is that it's not just an entire McGraw-Hill text or a text from another publisher, but many of us who teach courses, like, probably like five of the chapters out of a 14-chapter book, and then we like other chapters from a completely different publisher altogether. For course load, this is no problem because these are files that are rendered in course load, but it's an ongoing question for the publishers, and as Jennifer said, an opportunity for us to say, modularize this. I want chapters 3, 5, and 7 out of your text, but I don't want the entire text because I don't actually use it in my course, and I think that that's another opportunity that we have that a paper book really hasn't afforded us, and you know, we all had course packs and those kinds of things way back when. It's a bit like that, but with all of the tools and the annotation and highlighting capabilities that are on the reader. So I think it's another opportunity to push for that kind of flexibility.
Thank you, Stacy. Next, Alan?
First off, bravo for this session. I mean, it's incredibly rich. Whoever put this thing together did a fantastic job. the one thing that's really resonating with me is the idea that this is a disruption for the reading process, that students haven't grown up reading this way, or at least today's college students haven't grown up reading this way on electronic devices. I'm feeling my age a little bit because whenever I read for leisure, I actually use my iPad and a Kindle app, but whenever I do my research, I need my books. I need my books laid out because I'm flipping back and forth between things and I put stickies in and I feel like an octopus, you know, doing all of that. So I wanted to get your thoughts on any thoughts that you have about the next generation of students, whether they're going to grow up reading much more electronically, and whether that plus the improvement in technology is going to really transform this space.
So I speak from personal experience. I have a 15, a 13, and a 7-year-old at home. We don't go to the bookstore any longer. The 15-year-old reads for pleasure all of the time on the Kindle reader. He now has 3 of his textbooks are available in e-reader format. The paperwork actually came home at the beginning of the semester, beginning of the year. Do you want your student to have an e-book? And he took it to dad and he said, "Don't show this to mom. I want the hard copy." And I thought, I need to disown him, right? I'm doing this ebook pilot. But since then, we've shown him how he can search through the book for a particular piece. He's doing AP European History, and so did he need to know about this, or does he need to know about this? And so I think part of it is this, as students become more comfortable, as that generation comes up to us, and he's 2 years out, so he'll be there soon.
And I would liken it to those of us in the room that we also changed. I mean, I know for myself, I went through college with a typewriter, and when I did my graduate work, I had a word processor, and I completely changed my writing style to as I got used to it initially, and I think that's what we'll see with the next generation coming up. So next question.
I'm hoping that you can say more about the accessibility issue and whether you ran into any accessibility issues in your pilot and how you approached solving those issues.
Maybe both Stacy and I can comment on this. University of Minnesota did do a thorough accessibility study on the earlier generation of the e-reader that was used for this pilot. And we found that the navigation was accessible, but the content, because it was converted to an image, did not fully pass the accessibility guidelines. What I will say is that the course load group was very responsive to hearing our feedback, and as I have understood it, Stacy, they made some major changes in the latest version of the platform, and maybe you might want to say something briefly about that.
So Bob is exactly right. So there certainly were some accessibility issues, certainly ones that Course Load was very well aware of. And Course Load is a small company based in Indiana, and a very responsive group who always, I should tell you, had a plan for how to address these accessibility challenges. And some of it does come from what was given to them from the publishers in terms of files that were not accessible. So I think that we are in a time where Course Load has made dramatic progress and continues to do so. So I think that that's very encouraging. And I do want to acknowledge the excellent work of Minnesota. That report was very important and extremely well done, and is part of the spring report. But do know that when you read the report, know that considerable progress has been made, which is very encouraging.
Thank you. Next, yes. I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead.
Well, back to the question that was initially addressed by Bob. Just wondering if part of the reason that you saw that in one of the studies, I remember if it was Iowa or Indiana, where students overall were not preferring the e-book over the paper text, if that's partially due to the fact that they're simply digitized copies of paper books and were designed for that format primarily and have just not been adapted, reauthored, rewritten into a format that simply has much more power as an e-book, including interactivity, linking, and transformation to the way someone might want to read it because it's available electronically. Yeah. And where do you think we're at in terms of movement by the publishers?
I would say that cuts across every school in the pilot. That's a common finding, that the students still, while many of them did like the e-book format, you know, print, as I think one of the earlier people asking a question said, you know, you like your papers all spread out in front of you type of thing for that. And I think that's the next generation of looking at when will the multimedia. But that cut across every school of the student preferences, I think to varying degrees, but it was still in that early stage of tech adoption.
And I think that there's multiple variables here, right? It's the generational thing. They don't know exactly how to use it yet. It's the readability thing. It's the publishers not getting behind this and being as flexible as they need to be. So I think that your analogy, Claire, about this being the web 1992 is really astute. Where is that sort of the iTunes of it or the iPad that's going to jump out and make this just the place where it's much more comfortable to be? Because I, too, do all of my entertainment reading on my Kindle now, and I just can't seem to go back to a book. But I would never read some of the sorts of things that we've seen. They're very clunky sometimes and hard to deal with. So it takes a certain type of an individual to engage with that, and we're not taking advantage of the richness that we could yet. We're not even close. So there's just a whole bunch of factors, I think, involved.
Thank you, Maggie. So I think we have time for one more question.
I'm curious. I've heard it several times from the panel that there was a poor responsiveness from the publishers. And they have vested interest in essentially the PDF on a screen model. What are the barriers to, rather than constantly spending the energy and effort to just pound on them to finally change, we take the responsibility in our own hands and we simply come up with a better platform, and that includes maybe using open source. Instead of worrying about what we can access through these various sources, we take it back more as an academic community. I'm just curious, what do y'all think are the barriers and why that... Why the chance to throw it off is and basically say, no, we're not going to do it your way anymore?
One of the things we're doing in Minnesota is we have a major open educational resource initiative. It's in conjunction with the National Public Interest Research Group, our College of Education. They're putting up a lot of resources for peer review by faculty members. So I think that that content can easily go into EPUB format, for example. It's not imprisoned in this paper under glass analogy that a PDF is providing. And I think that is an excellent suggestion to provide some pressure on the publishers, just as open source course management systems, I think, have provided some pressure on some of the course management system proprietary vendors to improve their products. The last thing I guess I'd say in that area is that I think there'll be a push from accessibility for the publishers to change formats, and I think there will also be a push in terms of being able to accommodate the vast number of people who need to read things on tablets and can't just see it on a larger screen. So I think that there are going to be some elements that will push in the direction of more innovation on the part of the publishers.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank all of you for attending. Feel free, you can follow up with any of the six of us and look for our research reports as they become available to you. So thank you.